The Holy Gospel according to St. Luke, the 12th chapter.
Glory to you, O Lord.
Someone in the crowd said to Jesus, "Teacher, tell my brother to divide the family inheritance with me." But he said to him, "Friend, who set me to be a judge or arbiter over you?" And he said to them, "Take care. Be on your guard against all kinds of greed. For one's life does not consist in the abundance of possessions." Then he told them a parable. The land of a rich man produced abundantly, and he thought to himself, "What should I do? For I have no place to store my crops." Then he said, "I will do this. I will pull down my barns and build larger ones, and there I will store all my grain and my goods, and I will say to my soul, 'Soul, you have ample goods laid up for many years. Relax, eat, drink, and be merry.' But God said to him, 'You fool, this very night your life is being demanded of you. And the things you have prepared, whose will they be?' So it is with those who store up treasures for themselves, but are not rich toward God." The Gospel of the Lord.
Thanks to you.
You know, many of you know, I spent these last 2 weeks or so in central Wisconsin, in my family's home place. It is a tiny lake, hardly worthy of being called a lake. You can swim across it, even if you're not that great a swimmer. And I'm not sure why John's Lake is considered a part of the town of Wautoma, Wisconsin. Other than I guess it has to be a part of somewhere, so says someone. It takes fully 15 minutes to drive into town from the lake on curving two-lane highway through towering walls of corn on either side come late July. At least it used to. To drive to the Piggly Wiggly for eggs and milk got a little shorter a while ago because in the mid-2000s, a developer got it in his mind to build a little subdivision on the edge of town. And once the roads were in, we could cut right through, and the new street would dump us right into the grocery store parking lot, shaved probably 5 minutes off the drive. We watched the lots parceled and divided out. Little black iron-looking street lamps go in, and a few houses with well-manicured lawns and big garages started to go up. And by then, it was about 2008. And those few houses still stand there, sort of lonely, on their well-mowed hillsides, in a neatly ordered patch of mostly vacant lots, with tall grasses where the cranes like to wander, well lit at night by the wide array of black streetlights. The rest of those imagined homes were never built. The market crashed. The developer went bust. Still a great shortcut to the grocery store. But that's not what it was supposed to be. So many things aren't what they were supposed to be. What we plan them to be. I think the rich man in today's parable is maybe supposed to teach us this. I don't know about you, but I think it's uncanny how familiar his world sounds. It's like Jesus opened up a portal in time and space to vividly describe the realities of a world that wouldn't be for 2,000 more years, or at least the world that still is, maybe. Because what is this man chasing, if not something like what we would call the American dream? A house just a little bigger and better, security in an insecure world. It's kind of unsettling how Jesus seems to find him so misguided, because he sounds familiar. He sounds like me. I mean, all the story really says is that he was lucky and that he was planning ahead. I mean, really, his questions sound more like something that I might ask the financial planner I really need to go to than like something, you know, Gollum would whisper to his precious in a dank cave. Aren't I trying to save enough to live off comfortably someday when I can't work like I do now? Aren't most of us? Or haven't we already? Is that wrong? It is even a little bit comical that this whole parable arises out of the fact that someone brings a financial dispute or concern to Jesus, someone who wants his brother to share their family's wealth. And he might have had a legitimate need, too. But Jesus seems to say, "Who do you think I am to help parse your financial affairs? I am a wandering preacher who shares what little I own with the few friends who follow me, who subsists on the hospitality of strangers." This is not a branch of H&R Block that you just wandered into. But given that the question has come up, he does go on, as he is wont to do, because it turns out he does have something to say on the subject. And as is often the case, if we stay and listen to Jesus when he keeps talking, it gets a little more uncomfortable as each moment goes by and we think about what he seems to be saying. Because he seems to be saying that the whole way we've built our hope and our plans, and this microphone is falling out of my ear and I'm not using it anyway, the whole way we've built our hope and our plans is a foundation of shifting sand. That putting our hope in future comfort and security is not a pathway into the kingdom of God. Quite honestly, if we could open a portal in time and space and present to Jesus our hope in the American dream, if that's what we would call it, our hope that we might someday have enough to be safe and secure and not worried anymore like the man who came to him that day also hoped, I think he would tell us that that hope is built on a lie. A lovely, soothing lie. My teachers in unpacking this lie are many, and how it harms us as well. I'm going to try now and build off the insights of two people mostly, Reverend Lenny Duncan, a Lutheran pastor and author of the new book, Dear Church, and also the writings of Ejiomo Oluo. Anything wise I say comes from them from here on, and anything unintelligible is my fault, not theirs. Some of us get to live our whole lives without having to learn about the lie, like the rich man, who lived up until the very night that his life was being demanded of him without learning about it. Some of us get the lie pulled out from under us early on, when we learn that we really can't be anything that we want to be when we grow up, whether it's because of our social standing, our gender, our physical or mental ability, our race. I first realized the lie, or at least most poignantly maybe, when I was told that I would never be like my friend Peter and fly planes in the Air Force. Yes, there were 2 weeks in the 1990s when I thought for a minute that I wanted to be in the Air Force. Not realizing how much in me they were dashing to pieces when they said it, another adult just told me when I voiced this temporary dream, "You'll never fly. You have to have perfect vision." I can't be anything I want to be when I grow up. I wonder if that is a lie you ever believed. Do you remember when you realized it wasn't true? Jesus shows just about as much tact as the person who crushed my silly dream of flight in two sentences. But the dreams that are lies are not ones that Jesus has time for, because he is busy bearing a dream of true hope that changes everything and leads us to life into this world. And he will not be diverted, and he cannot afford to be, because the lies are killing us. And so to understand the good news and great worth of the dream that he is bearing into reality, we have to learn to distinguish it from the lie. We have to help each other learn. So many paths that we think or hope lead to life do not. and it is hard to learn that. I sometimes wonder if that shattering realization is something that is reaching farther into our world these days than it has before, and truly breaking more people who maybe haven't yet had their hope redirected more gently and sooner. You see, I knew I couldn't fly by the time I was 16, and our Black and brown and LGBTQ and femme siblings all learn it early too, and have to figure out how else they can direct their hope, what path might actually offer life when the lie doesn't anymore. But there are those of us who live for a long time able to believe that the American dream, or whatever we might want to call it, might really belong to them. That they might really be able to be whatever they want to be when they grow up just because they want it. That they might really be able to have any girl they like just because they want her. And it seems like some people in our world, when they have their hopes and desires denied them, when the lie is revealed for what it is, that denial shatters their understanding of how the world is supposed to work. And some of them then turn around and try to destroy the world that they were given that isn't the world they think they were promised. Since I last stood in this pulpit, 4 highly publicized shootings have happened. I should say 3, because one of them hasn't been highly publicized yet, because the news only broke at about 6 this morning. And there were certainly many more that had lower profiles and lower body counts. And it is shocking that I had to rewrite that last sentence at 6 a.m. this morning, because when I scrolled through the news when I woke up, I read about the most recent shooting, which is not the one in El Paso that killed at least 20 people, but now there are 9 more in Dayton, Ohio. This morning. What has broken inside of us, inside of these men, that makes them want to destroy instead of tread out a different path than the one they hoped for or imagined? We may not know for sure, but we have gathered entirely too much evidence in this cultural experiment of ours to pretend not to have any clue. I think we have lied to ourselves and to them. We have believed lies about who we are and what we can have. We feed on false places to put our hope, and it is poison. I don't say this to absolve any of those individuals who do horrific and violent things. Their actions are their own. But it is clear that the violence in our world is not a series of coincidences. There are root causes. There is a contagion, a vector. And today Jesus is telling us that we need to tell the truth about how life is hard and unfair. And there is no vaccine against that, and no birthright exemption. We need to tell the truth about which of the dreams are lies. Because every moment that we believe the lie, not only do we harm ourselves and others, we also miss a moment of living in the truth, in the kingdom. The truth that we don't have to wait for a more secure future to know we are beloved, to know that we have worth, to know that we have purpose, to know that we belong to God. Jesus is pointing us to life, to living fully in the moment that we have, which might be more beautiful than we realize, to not letting ourselves become isolated in the midst of the fortress we are building, to protect ourselves from the world, because the safer we make it, the more we are cut off. And soon we will realize that we have kept out everything that could harm us, which is to say, everyone and everything else, even to the very germs in the air. But in doing so, we didn't even leave ourselves air to breathe. The man in the story, did you notice how he was only talking to himself? Was he so alone? Are we?
We aren't. We don't have to be. We can tell each other the truth. Yes, about how hard it is, and about how little is guaranteed, and also about how precious this breath and this imperfect moment and these imperfect and beautiful relationships and humans that surround us really are. About how much we have to give and enjoy and celebrate right now in this moment together as we. About how God lives. God lives in this precious, fragile moment and life with us. Because the feast being prepared for us isn't to store up later. That's not one that you put in your bunker, in your compound, for the end times like the people with the infomercials. It is for a party that God is throwing right this minute. And we are all invited, and so is everyone else. Everyone joyful, everyone broken, everyone hurting, everyone dreaming. And this celebration is the very real hope that this sick, broken world needs. And we get to invite people in. May it be so. Amen.